It's the News Roundup, where we discuss the region's top stories of the week. And joining us this week, Paul Pronovo, editor at the Cape Cod Times. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Mindy.
And Laura Reckford, editor at the Barnstable Enterprise. Good morning, Laura.
Morning, Mindy.
Well, Paul, a very serious subject that doesn't always get a lot of ink, as they say, is suicide. And you had a two-part series this week looking at that issue. And it's a big concern in this area.
Right, it is. And, a recent month, there were three suicides in Barnstable, which is a very high number, of course. And it made us stop and think we need to take a sort of a deeper dive on this issue. As you say, it doesn't get a lot of ink, so we gave it a little bit in a two-day look from a couple different angles. It's an issue that unfortunately affects folks here on Cape Cod and the islands at a higher level than the state and the national trends would be. Number of reasons for this, substance abuse, depression. I think on the islands there's a whole subset of other issues that they face. Of course, you remember a couple of years ago in Nantucket, mm-hmm. they had, I believe it was four young folks, three high schoolers and one recent graduate from Nantucket High School in the span of about a year and a half that committed suicide. So it's a really serious issue. And we took a look at it from a couple different angles. One from sort of the police perspective, you know, how they have to deal with it. And as you can imagine, you know, when you think about what a police officer has to deal with on a day in and day out basis, one of the most difficult things they have to deal with is arriving at a suicide scene or dealing with someone who is potentially suicidal. Mm. And it really raises the stress level for police officers, and they have to go through a whole host of training programs to prepare themselves for it and, frankly, to decompress from it after they have dealt with this sort of situation.
Yeah, a lot of quick thinking there where you have to assess, you know, because sometimes a suicidal person also could be homicidal. So that's a lot you have to process in a very quick time.
So step one is obviously for the officer to protect their own safety if they come across someone who is suicidal because, as you say, suicidal people are often homicidal people, and they want to harm someone, including themselves, but could be someone else, and that's an issue. But of course, beyond that, a police officer is looking to bring someone into a safe environment to save their lives. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are countless examples of that. It was interesting. Sean Sweeney in Barnstable told us that it's not unusual for them to deal with one suicidal person a day.
That's a lot. Yeah, that's
just
amazing.
It's remarkable. Yeah. And again, this is their day-to-day life.
And that's just one police department.
And that's just one police department on the Cape. You can extrapolate that for all the departments. So we looked at it from that angle, from the law enforcement angle, and then we looked at it also from sort of the mental health angle. And it's interesting because, you know, frankly, there are some holes in the program, and mm-hmm. folks who had been suicidal and maybe even attempted suicide, they'd go into a facility, a psychiatric ward, and then they'd be checked out and basically let go with mm-hmm. sometimes no more than an appointment card for follow-up visitation. And that leads to, you know, significant problems. In fact, a very high number of suicides are committed by folks who had been either in the hospital or in a ward within the past 2 months. So I believe it's about half of the cases. So that is a real issue. Here on the Cape, they have a pilot program going through the Cape Psych Center where basically they, I think as it was put, keep their arms around folks longer after they're released to keep them in treatment, to keep an eye on them, have someone check in on them at least a couple days a week. And the hope, of course, is to keep people from getting themselves in a bad situation. And it's a program that's just started recently. We'll see. Hopefully it will bear good results.
And as Paul said, there's the moment when the police arrive, and as difficult and horrible as that moment is, but then these people have this for the rest of their lives. There'll be many other moments. And so how to sort of keep them healthy mm-hmm. as time goes on after they leave the hospital, this is really the difficult
right.
problem.
And right. this, you brought this up in the story too. This points to the shortage of psychiatrists. We feel that here, but this is really a national issue, the shortage of psychiatrists. But on the Cape, I think it was the Outer Cape, they just recently were able to get a psychiatrist on staff. They've been trying for years.
It really is frightening. And we've talked, obviously, quite a bit on the show about the lack of medical professionals in general here mm-hmm, here on the right. Cape and the Islands. But when it comes to specialties like a psychiatrist, it's really scary because, you know, you literally don't have someone who could treat certain things, and or you do, but you don't have enough numbers to treat the demand. And that is a real issue because if you don't, well, there's literally no place to turn, and that's why it's something that they're hoping to address.
And then when we look at preventive programs, you know, prevention, Nantucket, as you mentioned, had the issue with the teenagers, and they really, as a community, came together and really tried to tackle this problem and prevent anything, any further suicides.
Right. It really ripped at the fabric of the community, and of course, Nantucket being an island, you know, it's a close-knit group to begin with. I mean, really, everyone sort of knows everyone's business, and it was really gut-wrenching what happened in the 2007-2008 range. And compounding it, of course, was these were young folks. Mm-hmm. These were people in the high school, or as I mentioned, one who had just recently graduated. So it was really a terrible situation. The good news is, as you say, that the town rallied around first of all, the folks who had suffered. But beyond that, they created these programs, preventative programs, proactive programs in the school, looking for warning signs of mm-hmm. depression or suicidal tendencies and addressing those head on. Since that time, I believe they've been successful in preventing suicides, knock on wood here. Mm-hmm. But, you know, inevitably it will happen. But to have a program in place like they do, several programs in place, and in fact some experts now on the island to deal with this, mm-hmm. That's good news. And the, you know, the other good news was, it being Nantucket, the high numbers, it got not only statewide but national attention. Mm-hmm. And I think as a result, some state dollars were pointed at the island, and they, you know, the state said, we can't allow this to happen. Mm-hmm. And they've addressed it and seems to have addressed it well.
And then we had the issue in Falmouth where it wasn't teenagers, it was more middle-aged men. And I thought this was fascinating, that effort they had to go to the businesses, because I guess a lot of men weren't showing up at some of these workshops or, you know, seminars that they had. So they went to the businesses to try to, reach out before there were issues. And that seemed to be a pretty successful program.
Well, it's so difficult to figure out how to reach people who mm-hmm. are in danger of this. And I know, and Paul will know, that the advocates who try to prevent people from suicide are very conscious of how the media portrays it.
Right.
And that there's been evidence that sometimes when the media writes about that, there can be problems with copycat. Mm-hmm. And so when you have a small community like Falmouth, or particularly like the island of Nantucket, that you have to be particularly mm-hmm. careful. And they tell us never, for instance, to use terms succeeded in committing suicide.
Right.
That suicide is not, there's nothing to do with success there. But it's very difficult because, and you see in these bets, like what happened in Falmouth, that people are perhaps reading about it mm-hmm. and for some reason that might give them the impetus to do it themselves.
And also, though, you might have somebody who hears these stories and says, you know, I need some help, and reaches out for some of the help too. So like I said, this is, I guess, the line we walk where you want to talk about it, but you want to talk about it in the right way that you don't, you know, make the problem any worse.
That's right.
Well, other news this week, residents of Peter's Pond RV Resort say they are continuing to be threatened by park management.
Yeah, this is sort of a strange story. You know, you see these sometimes in timeshares and in sort of RV homes like at Peter's Pond, the upsell of a membership of some sort. And the Attorney General's office said that there was inappropriate sort of strong-arm tactics at the Peter's Pond facility by Morgan's RV, which is basically their management company. In fact, the Attorney General reached an agreement where a lot of the folks who lived at the park would be reimbursed for memberships that they had been pressed into purchasing that they really didn't need. And so that agreement was reached in June, I believe. The Attorney General put out a notice that said these folks will be reimbursed, you know, basically with no cost to them. Fast forward to August, it appears that, in fact, the residents were told, well, you can withdraw from this membership, but there are going to be some fees on the backside for things like cable service and internet, things that basically would have amounted to a penalty if they had withdrawn. And that, according to the Attorney General, was not at all what they agreed to. And so they're going back at Morgan RV and saying, you know, look, we're suing you again because we have to enforce this. You are not doing what you said you would do. And the residents are very concerned about this. A lot of elderly folks mm-hmm. at Peter's Pond, as is the case with a lot of these mobile home situations, not a lot of, ironically enough, a lot of mobility from these mobile homes. I mean, people really don't have a lot of housing options. And I think it's why the Attorney General has taken such a great interest in this, is that this is a housing option for folks that sometimes don't have any other options. So they don't want to see people taken advantage of. And given the population there, they're looking to enforce some action and and we'll see what happens. But it seems, frankly, pretty cut and dried that the Attorney General had reached this agreement. It's not being upheld, so they're going back to enforce it.
Yeah. It's a news roundup. We're talking about the top stories of the week. Some local citizens threatening to sue Entergy, which owns the Pilgrim Nuclear Power Station in Plymouth. What's this lawsuit about?
I remember a story back in the spring. Our reporter, Patrick Cassidy, said maybe the opponents to Pilgrim plant have found their spotted owl in sort of the fish kill situation around the plant. Energy plants, including the one at Pilgrim, take water in for a cooling system and then eject water out. As you might imagine, the water that goes out is heated, and you can imagine the water that comes in brings a byproduct, often fish. And that is of concern to folks because it is affecting the wildlife species in that area, particularly different fish. And so a group of local residents are saying, you know, this is something that has been addressed in the regulations that govern Pilgrim, and it's not being upheld by Entergy. They're not meeting the most basic standards. And in fact, they believe the feds haven't really updated the regulations, but what is in place isn't being enforced. And so they're looking to file suit to address the situation. These are the same complaints we heard during the relicensing process that happened in the spring. The arguments were made and frankly, largely ignored. Mm-hmm. At least it seems they were largely ignored by the NRC because no action was taken at the time. So we'll see if a legal action forces their hand. Pilgrim's been relicensed, so they have a 20-year license. So it's not like, at least it appears, that they wouldn't be taken offline at this point since these are the same arguments that were made. But perhaps the regulations could be enforced about how much water comes in and what sort of mitigation efforts have to be in place. So we'll see what happens.
Well, it's interesting because when the plant got relicensed, it seemed as though the opponents lost the war. It turns out they only lost the battle because this goes on, and this could be a very serious issue for the plant. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. And we've talked about before, I mean, the things related to Pilgrim are very frustrating for folks in and around the plant. Certainly here on Cape Cod, just last week
we had
the meeting. And, you know, even Senate President Terry Murray has said in the past, you know, she can't get them to listen to her. The governor has had the same frustration. So it's really, you wonder what will get their attention. And so far, not a lot has.
Yeah, this might be it, like you said.
We'll see.
Well, there's a bit of tension in the Seaside Park neighborhood in West Hyannisport over beach access.
Yeah, this is interesting because this is a neighborhood that's in between sort of Hyannisport and Craigville Beach. Very well-appointed neighborhood, you know, straight-line streets, 1st Ave, 2nd Ave, 3rd Ave, etc. And in the middle of this neighborhood, there's a public access point for the neighbors, and they it has a beach access. In recent times, a chain has been brought across the road that leads to the beach access at night, basically to limit, according to the folks at the Improvement Association, the riffraff from going down there drinking, doing drugs, what have you. You know, folks in the Improvement Association have said they found needles down there, bottles, what have you. And they believe that this chain has done a good job of eliminating those problems. The bad news is it also has limited the people who want to get down there and have legitimate access, whether they have mobility problems and they can't walk down the beach or they're trying to bring a kayak or what have you. And so there is some tension among folks in the neighborhood. The folks who say the chain is helpful, they say, let's keep it. Folks who believe that they're being limited point to a trust that goes back to, I believe, 1893 that should allow the folks that live in the Seaview Avenue neighborhood to have access. And they believe currently they're in violation of the trust. So it's kind of a brouhaha that's going on down there.
Yeah, well,
Well, beach access, I mean,
it's
this
big
is
issue,
a,
yeah.
all
really, yeah.
over mm-hmm. the Cape and over the years, how things get overgrown, perhaps on purpose by accident, mm-hmm. chains go up, different things happen, and people start to notice. And there have been towns, Barnstable's one of them, Falmouth is another, who have set committees to make sure those beach access points that have always been available to the public. This one's available to a neighborhood association, but there are public points to make sure those remain open. And this is just an ongoing job, and not just clearing the land, but making sure that these places remain public. You'll find in every town on Cape Cod, traditional beach access points that were supposed to be always open to the public have been grown over or somehow have gone away.
Yeah, and if you don't get on that soon
That's
enough,
right.
then you could lose your access to the beach.
Right.
What I also found interesting in this story was one of the neighbors who had said that he was told by a real estate agent by having that limited access could reduce his property values by as much as $100,000.
Right. I think he said he was told by a retired real estate agent that it could be reducing his property value by $100,000. So in other words, we don't know exactly if that's the case. On the other hand, that's the sort of concern people have. I mean, not only do you lose your actual rights to get down to the beach at certain times, but perhaps it could affect your property value, and that's something nobody wants. But it all speaks also to sort of the echo chamber that happens when you get in these neighborhood disputes and neighbors against neighbors. I think one person pointed out, oh, it's just two people who are creating a fuss about this, when in fact it's not. I think it's a number of people, and I think, as Laura pointed out, it requires some vigilance to maintain your access rights, no matter what the situation, because if you don't speak up, it's going to be gone and you'll never get it back.
Exactly.
And $100,000 is a lot of money, but I don't think anyone would argue that beach access would be something that would affect property values on Cape Cod.
Right, yeah. All right, Laura, Homeless Not Hopeless, buying a new house on Main Street in Hyannis?
Yes, this is an organization that was founded by homeless people, and their idea was to have a group home where they would take people literally off the street, out of the woods, house them, get them jobs, get them counseling, get them health care, and eventually get them permanent homes. And people are in these houses for maybe 6 months, maybe 9 months, maybe longer. But it's a temporary place in between essentially the woods and a permanent home. And it's been working. It uses private fundraising. It doesn't use government money. There are two homes on Ocean Street in Hyannis, and a home on Baxter Road in Hyannis was opened last year. They're looking at a new place, 22 Main Street in Hyannis, which is very close to the Duffy Center. That would have 14 rooms for women who are homeless. Yeah. The project went before the Zoning Board of Appeals Wednesday night because the area is zoned for medical use. Educational use would also be okay. So Homeless Not Helpless needed to prove that they were educational. There are no classrooms. There are no certified teachers. But what Billy Bishop, the founder and president of the organization, said is the education takes place at the kitchen table. Mm-hmm. And it is between the people who run the establishment, himself and others, who have been homeless themselves, speaking to the people who are down on their luck, and modeling for them, and just through casual conversations sometimes, showing them how to fit back into society. Yeah. They say they're successful. They say they have an 85% success rate. There were some neighbors of the property who came, and they were worried, well, they're doing this now. It's very laudable. What about 6 months, a year from now, if it becomes a different kind of an establishment? What recourse do we have then? But Homeless Not Helpless advocates said they are there to stay. They're not going anywhere. And they seem to convince the neighbors as well as the Zoning Board of Appeals, which voted unanimously to allow them to go into that spot.
Well, I'm just thinking, I remember back, we did a program on this, I think, when there was one house. And as I recall, the neighbors were very complimentary.
Well, and that's what came up at this hearing, that the people that live in this house, they are the best neighbors anyone's ever had. And there were letters from neighbors and testimony from neighbors. These are the people who fix your lawnmower when it's broken. They rake your leaves. If there's any problem, they're the best neighbors you'd ever have. So that was certainly brought up.
Yeah. And that's helpful, of course. And you can imagine, I mean, Billy Bishop is a very dynamic figure and really driven to make this work. And he's building a very laudable program that's addressing an issue that is talked about all the time, especially right. in the greater Hyannis area. You know, what are you going to do with the homeless situation? And the NOAA shelter exists. It has to exist, and some of the other social service programs are in place. This is something that is a transitional program mm-hmm. that takes people, moves them along. And so you could see Bishop making that argument that, in fact, what bigger education are you going to get than taking you from when you're homeless to transitioning to where you can stand on your own two feet, live your own life, and move on right. from that place. And that's the idea here. And Laura points out the idea that you have not one but two homes that are testimonials to the success of this program. You can see why the ZBA would go for yep. it. And you would imagine if you come back a year from now, the neighbors will probably be pretty satisfied exactly. as well.
And Billy Bishop himself is, as Paul says, an amazing speaker. He was on the streets himself for mm-hmm. 10 years out in the woods, and he'll tell you stories. You can't believe it.
Right. Well, and I think one of the interesting things about this program is you mentioned NOAA and some of the other programs are out there, but not everybody is a right fit for that program. So he's addressing some needs of people who might fall through the cracks otherwise.
Well, that's, and he said, you know, he spent time in NOAA. He spent yep. time at Gosnold, other places, and he tried to learn from those, but he modeled this after a way that he would have learned from. Mm-hmm. And so he feels it does take people who, as he says, no one else wants them.
Yeah. Well, Oysterfest kicks off today, and organizers are doing everything they can to make sure no one gets sick from a bacteria that's been widespread in seawater in warm coastal areas. And the shell fishermen have really been really on this and really doing a great job to try to keep this at bay.
Yeah, well, you remember last year there were a couple incidents around Oysterfest of possible food poisoning as a result of the bacteria that spread. It was never really defined exactly how widespread this problem was, but questions were raised. And as you can imagine, the shell fishermen who make their livelihood mm-hmm. on oystering out in Wellfleet and beyond took it very seriously. And the state did as well, but the state regulations were in place. The oyster folks in Wellfleet said, we're taking it even a step further, and we're going to make sure we have all the steps in place. I believe that anyone who is bringing oysters to this weekend's Oyster Fest had to have them in a central refrigerated case, Alex Hayes, mm-hmm. Big refrigeration case. I think there's 100,000 oysters yeah. Sitting there right now, and they're bringing it down below state standards in a good way mm-hmm. Of the temperature to make sure that they address the situation. And you know, honestly, if there was a situation at all last year, largely it was due to Mother Nature. I mean, mm-hmm. the folks that are harvesting the oysters were doing the same thing they've done all along. But if you recall, the weather was very warm last
right.
year. We had some extremely low tides, which exposed the oyster beds to higher temperatures. And then when they're harvested, if they're not on ice almost immediately, you know, you're going to have some issues. And so they've addressed that. Shouldn't be any problems. And, of course, Wellfleet Oyster Fest kicks off now,
Yum.
Like literally now.
anyone who hasn't been to this event, it is so much fun. Live music, great food, is really
Delicious.
A great time.
Yeah. Well, Cape Cod Artist has plans that he says could create a number of jobs for artists.
Yeah, this is a really kind of intriguing program. We'll see what becomes of it, but you certainly can't fault Robert John Cook for his vision. He wants artists to be able to be successful, and not just successful in their artwork, but also in making money. And so Robert John Cook created the I Stand Up for Cape Cod program. He's hoping to have basically little mini businesses, everything from a restaurant to a consignment store to an artist's sort of collaborative that are run like businesses. And in fact, he's partnered with John Clifford. I think I might be getting the name wrong.
Cliff Robbins.
Cliff Robbins. Thank you. And he is with UMass, and he is basically a business specialist where if an artist says, I've got this great idea, Cliff Robbins says, great, where's the business plan? Mm-hmm. Where's the marketing plan? And helps them essentially learn how to make money off their artwork. And so he's bringing these groups together. They're vetting different programs. They're hoping to get state funding, and their plans are very ambitious. They want to create 30 of these sort of little micro businesses, if you will. They want space on Main Street in Hyannis. And they just, again, have very ambitious plans. It feels almost like you see across the state little incubator businesses, mm-hmm. like I believe it's in Dartmouth, they have a tech incubator that's run by the UMass system. Here, it seems like they want to have an artist business incubator, and if that gets off the ground, it's pretty intriguing.
Like what Cliff said, artists generally don't make a lot of money, but artists don't need to starve. Good point.
Right.
And I would say ideas are fantastic. Right. Ideas are great. It's about execution. The Arts right. Foundation, the Cape Cod Chamber of Commerce, they've all been working on this idea for years of how can artists actually make a living on Cape yeah. Cod. They did an Artists and Craftsperson Trails book mm-hmm. where, to lead people to people's studios when they right. can't afford to have an actual storefront, that people would come to people's homes and see how they do their work and perhaps yeah. purchase things. So I think a lot of people on the Cape are in the same park
yeah,
on this,
exactly.
trying to make it work. Yep.
And, you know, it's an issue that's really come to the forefront in well, I mean, it's always been somewhere in the conversation, but it came to the forefront when Barnes Municipal Airport had asked artists to basically donate right. their art and have mm-hmm. it on display. And that folks said, well, that's great marketing. Other folks said, look, we want to make sure we're getting
paid
for
our work.
We get asked
to do this
work.
A lot.
Yeah, I mean, that's
yeah.
a lot of in-kind donation.
All right. Laura, maybe a month ago, Paul, you and I said, what, the regatta's closed and now it's sold?
Well, that's right. The foreclosure auction happened yesterday. About 9 people registered to bid on the auction. The winning bidders were Peter Menounos, who owns the Santuit Inn nearby, and his business partner, Paul Roif. They both live in Kootuat. And longtime property owners on the Cape, and they said that they want to bring it back to its glory days. This is a building, one of the most historic in the town of Barnstable.
Yeah.
The deeds say that it was built in 1809. We don't know the exact date, but it had served as the Kootuat Library, the Kootuat Post Office, the first store in the mm-hmm. town of Barnstable. Long history. The buying a property in foreclosure requires a check for $10,000 be presented on the spot. They have 45 days to finalize the deal. Mm. But the new owners, the winning bidders, say that they plan to open up in the spring with a fresh concept, and they'll be welcoming people back to the regatta this spring.
But we don't know if they're going to keep the same name or not, right?
We don't know that yet.
And it'll be a high-end restaurant.
That's what they said.
Yeah. Will there be buffalo steak? That's the only
one of the
place
things
on
they
the
were
Cape
known
I think you can
for
get it. Exactly. Love it.
I know. I love buffalo steak, too. Hopefully, they'll keep that on the menu, right? Paul Pronovo, editor at the Cape Cod Times. Laura Reckford, editor at the Barnstable Enterprise. Thank you both.
Thanks, Mindy.
Thanks, Mindy.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening. Point airs weekdays at 9:30 a.m. and 7:30 p.m. We're also on Facebook at The Point, WCAI. The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH.